My name is Jennifer Cabe. I am the Jennifer Cabe of presenters there. And along with my co-authors, Dr. Andrew Pleasant and our colleague, Rainey Wharf, we are very pleased to have this chance to talk with you about the Canyon Ranch Institute Life Enhancement Program. And the findings that we're going to be sharing are from a now 3.5-year-old program that is still ongoing in the South Bronx at a federally qualified community health center called Urban Health Plan that serves approximately 27,000 patients in that community. And we have the following disclosure. We have no disclosure. The Canyon Ranch Institute Life Enhancement Program is, I suppose, both complementary and alternative, trying to keep with the context for this session. And we are a 501c3 nonprofit public charity, the Canyon Ranch Institute, which was founded by the same people who founded the world-famous Canyon Ranch, which is a place where people go either on scholarship or by paying a considerable amount of money to experience an integrative health approach to life. So mind, body, spirit, emotion. This is not a one-off sort of thing where you say, I do yoga once a month. Wow, I'm integrative. This is everything from how you eat and when you eat and your physical activity and your biomarkers through all the appropriate clinical testing, et cetera, et cetera. And Canyon Ranch is campuses in several parts of the United States and also on some very fancy cruise ships like the Queen Mary II. The Canyon Ranch Institute does programs in different places around the United States, and we're just this month expanding to Peru. Everything that we do in the Canyon Ranch Institute, in addition to always being about integrative health, is about two other things: prevention of chronic disease and advancing health literacy. So when we talk about chronic disease, I think everybody in this room knows what we mean by chronic disease and why it's a very important thing to try to address, as in prevent and mitigate chronic diseases. So a little bit more on the setting. Again, I don't think that any of the information here is going to be brand new news to anybody, although we do think, and this is thanks to my colleague Dr. Pleasant, we do think that this is kind of an interesting way to slice looking at the data related to the cost of chronic disease and what can be saved, not only in terms of health and well-being, but also the economics of prevention of chronic disease and the cost-effectiveness of prevention. The thing we're always looking for in public health, I think. So, I've told you a little bit about Canyon Ranch Institute. Andrew is going to tell you a whole lot more about the Life Enhancement Program. And just for our partners with Urban Health Plan, in this little photograph you see in the upper right-hand corner is a photo that we took last fall, a little over a year ago, when we opened the basically the little health and wellness center inside this community health center in the South Bronx. It's on Southern Boulevard, if you know where that is in New York. And this little Centro de Salud y Bienestar is gym equipment. It's yoga mats, it's plants, it's a place where people can sit and have meditation time. It's, by gym equipment, I mean the weights and the cardio stuff and all that. And this is the place where people come to have the didactic sessions that are part of the Life Enhancement Program that Andrew's going to tell you about, related to nutrition, physical activity, joyful living, purposeful living, all of the different aspects of what we bring into an integrative health model. And one of the things that we're particularly excited about is the fact that the the urban health plan received through the, what do we call it, the big ERA funding, the stimulus funding. They received a, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 million to build a new community health center, and it's all going to be in this integrative health model. So when we talk about sustainability for a program, very, very important. What we're starting to see is sustainability in an infrastructure, so that they are building into this new building, the new community health center, the a gym, a place for people to cook and eat together, a place for people to have lockers. And so this is for patients and staff and everybody to come together and experience the education, the educational sessions and the experiential sessions, if you will. So this is the last slide I'm going to cover, and then I'm going to ask Andrew to come up and take over. A little bit more about the Life Enhancement Program. In the South Bronx, this program is held twice a week with the participants for a total of 6 weeks. They come together with a variety of instructors. The instructors are, we call them facilitators, have been trained through the Life Enhancement Center at Canyon Ranch, and then through what we call a capstone or bridge session, where the Canyon Ranch Institute staff go out and meet with the facilitators, who are a core team comprised of staff from the community health center. And we're doing this in other clinics and community health centers around the country, but it's always a core team of a nutritionist, a physician, an expert in physical activity, an expert in spirituality, an expert in behavioral health or life management. There's always a champion at the Urban Health Plan. It was the president and CEO, Paloma Hernandez. And these facilitators who form this core team, in addition to doing these program sessions, lectures, group sessions, etc., they also do they do one-on-one sessions. So each patient gets, at no cost to them, a one-hour session with a physician, and this is after after assessments have been done, a one-hour session with a nutritionist, a one-hour session with an exercise expert, and a one-hour session with a behavioral health expert. So this is going through the elements of the program in a group setting as well as an individual setting. So it's the clinical and the population health approach, with that underpinning always of social support. So this is what we mean by the integrative health approach, definitely. And I'm going to stop there and say, Andrew, you're okay. On.
Cool, thank you. Just to segue for a minute, the reason that you didn't find this presentation in the book, because I saw you looking, is because we did a switch, because we had a conflict necessarily. We were supposed to be tomorrow, and the person who was going to go first today is now going to be in tomorrow's complimentary and alternative session. So if you're looking for that person, that's where they'll be. Nonetheless, I'll carry on anyway. So I'm going to tell you just a little bit more detail about what's in this program and how what we've actually done is taken sort of an approach to traditional medicine and combined that with complementary and alternative approaches and made it into an integrative package. And then we'll talk about the data from the evaluation and show you the positive changes we've been able to witness in people's life. There are several core elements. They sort of reflect the personnel that are part of the core team. Well, it starts with nutrition, and then the bullets are just some of the sort of outcomes that we hope people gain from the nutrition component of the program, right? For example, learning the value of whole foods, learning the value of a balanced approach to your diet, understanding portion sizes, right? What do we actually get served versus what we really should eat? For example, if any of you have been to a Cheesecake Factory, you're very well aware that there can be a huge difference between a portion as served and a portion as healthy. The idea of mindful eating and how it can actually have healthy benefits if you simply just take your time and think through the process of what you're eating, where it came from, and what pace you're eating it at as well, the speed of your eating. All of this is built into the nutrition component, and it's sort of topped off by two things. Experientially, cooking demonstrations occur throughout to teach people how to cook healthy food. And we always take them through a grocery store visit, because it's just actually amazing to go with participants to a grocery store and learn what they think about the food that's healthy in the store versus what actually may be healthy. There's been a pretty big disconnect in that. Every time a spinoff to this entire program that was absolutely unanticipated is that local grocery store owners are becoming huge promoters of the program, to the extent that in the South Bronx, where we're talking about today, the local tienda, when the program started, had no fresh fruits and vegetables, and now it's almost entirely fresh fruits and vegetables, and partly because the head of the urban health plan went next door to the tienda early on and said, I will support you as you make this transition. So at the end of the day, if you have any left over, I'm going to come buy them. And at first, there was stuff to buy. And then as the idea caught on, there was less and less to buy. We went into a local grocery store in Cleveland, Ohio, where we have another one of these programs in progress, and that owner was, he almost started to cry, actually, when we talked to him about the program, because he had just experienced one of his long-term customers had died from obesity-related complications. And he said to us, I know I'm killing these people by the food that they're buying from my store, and I want to do something about it. So in the third location in Missouri, the local grocery store there, who they actually went through the program, they're gonna let us put little flags all through the store on what's healthy and what's not. And they just volunteered that out of the blue. Just a phenomenal outcome. The second core element is physical activity. This is exercise. We actually work with people to teach them a variety of ways that they can move their body to get healthier outcomes. And this includes dancing, walking, using bands, Tai Chi. Sort of a side light on this, in a focus group we just held in another location, the residents there said, please don't call it Tai Chi or yoga, just call it healthy movement, because they felt uncomfortable with those terms, because they're in a very small rural community, and they just felt like that wasn't part of their culture. But they liked the idea, they just didn't like the words. So fine, we're adapting. Another core element, behavior change. So this is part of everybody sits down with a behavioral specialist and talks about their life and the challenges towards making changes to a more positive life. Sense of purpose ties in with the spirituality. So in some communities will have a pastor from a local church, and another one it could be someone who just takes a broader perspective on spirituality and doesn't necessarily tie it to a religion, whatever fits. Another core element is the integrative health idea. Explaining to people that, you know, to just do one of these is probably not enough. You sort of have to adopt a healthier lifestyle across a range of dimensions in order to get the health outcomes that you want. And this is all informed by a really pretty rigorous clinical examination. So people come into the program knowing their health status in a way that they might not have ever known it before because of the evaluation. All the evaluation information is fed back to participants and staff. Stress reduction is another core element, and this is one we've seen just some dramatic outcomes, and I'll show you that data in a little bit. And as you can see, there are quote-unquote alternative practices blended into this as well. And social support, which turns out to be one of the most important elements overall. In fact, what's happened is that people have voluntarily created a reunion structure for themselves, because they go through the program. It's 6 weeks here, it's 12 weeks in other locations, and they invariably say, we want to stay together as a group, how can we do that? Because the people in my group are the people who are helping me make the changes, and so we've supported and encouraged that sort of reunion structure. They come back on a monthly basis, and it turns out that actually it's been rather, outcomes have been way predictive of how the social support structure takes off in the long run when we look through the data. So. The data that we'll show you today are from the first three groups at the Urban Health Plan. In total, there were 41 people that went through it, 34 women, 7 men. No one in this program is ever required to participate in the evaluation. So when I show you the data, you're gonna see the N varies pretty dramatically sometimes based on whether someone just felt like doing that part of the evaluation. We don't require it. It's not ipso facto to be part of the program. And then just in terms of significance, it's a paired sample t-test between the pre and the post. We're just collecting plus 1 year data now. And of course, because it's a fairly small sample still, we're not gonna say that this is gonna be true for anybody else than the people that we're talking about. There's my statistical disclaimer. Okay, so 1 minute, we're gonna have to do this really quick and skip that.
5 minutes.
Oh, I thought you said five.
You have five by my clock.
Oh.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We have one. We'll be very quick. I could actually stop here, because this is it. We have found statistical changes across a host of outcomes, but I'll really quickly flip them through you. Everything on these tables is statistically significant for the participants, ranging from cholesterol levels, balance, the ability to do push-ups, body mass index, weight. What we've developed is sort of an exercise efficiency score, which says, you know, how much you're getting out of the energy that you put into exercise and how much can you actually do over time. All of these have improved in a healthy direction. In terms of knowledge, attitude, and behaviors, knowledge has gone up, the number of healthy days has gone up, nutrition self-efficacy, exercise self-efficacy, stress has dropped, depression has dramatically dropped for some people. And qualitatively, because sometimes it's the stories that really move people, I just have a couple quotes from participants. I'm not going to read it word for word because you can all read it quicker than I would read it out loud anyway. And you'll see that people really walked out of this program with some very important new ideas. This is another person talking about the effects of the program during the focus group. And she talked about how she related with her daughter, who she could never talk with her, and she noticed the change. And we've seen this throughout, that people's families have been the ones who have said, what's going on in your life now? All of a sudden, you're not staying in your apartment 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're getting out, you're walking, you're talking, you're meeting people. It's a whole new possibility for life for some of the participants in this program. So what we can say overall, right, we now have demonstration projects in South Bronx, Milan, Cleveland. We start in Tucson early next year. They're all based on the same framework, but we tailor each one to each community so that it matches the local cultural aspects of whatever population we're trying to reach. We have positive trends across the board in terms of reversing chronic disease, and every one of the LEPs go through the same sort of rigorous evaluation, which happens pre, post, plus 3 months for blood work, and plus 1 year for the whole evaluation package. And that's it. If you want to learn more, this is the website. There's tons of information. We're very transparent about what we do. Thank you.
That was wonderful.
Thanks.
Thank you. But wait, do you have any questions for Andrew and for Jennifer? Are there questions about their project?
I just had one question in my education. I just wondered who is doing the nutrition element?
Yes. Our on-staff nutritionist is Christine Sardo. She's also a registered dietitian. And in addition, we work very closely with the nutritionists who are, for the most part, registered dietitians at Canyon Ranch in terms of developing the curriculum as well as the facilitator's manual for the nutritionists who are providing the information in the community health centers, the clinics that Andrew spoke about. In addition, the people who are delivering the information are themselves nutritionists. So Elvira in the community health center urban health plan that we spoke about today, and the data we presented today was from the South Bronx. She's an RD. She's been working in that community for close to 20 years. Yeah, she trained, throughout her career to be able to be a nutritionist, but it's that she also knows her people. And it's not just about speaking Spanish, it's about she's their nutritionist. They trust her.
We have a question here and then one over here.
Yeah, the follow-up data that you showed, was that, what was the time frame for that follow-up?
That was the baseline compared to the immediate post.
Okay, and
yep.
Do you have, although you didn't present it, do you have any data on one year?
We're the first cohort just finished the plus 1 year at this site, and I can unofficially tell you that they're holding changes, but I don't have the whole data file in my hand because it's still in the South Bronx.
And do you have plans for comparisons?
Oh yeah, across the board, and as we add cities and sites, the evaluation is relatively consistent across sites, so we're going to be able to aggregate across cities as well as across years. In the South Bronx, one of the sessions, one of the programs was in English, the rest were in Spanish. In Cleveland so far, they've all been in English, but that'll vary. And in Milan, there is a very, it's a very small community of about 5,000 people. There is a small Hispanic population, and we hope to be able to bring a whole cohort through in Spanish there. In Tucson, I would guess that most of them will be in Spanish.
And do you find anything different between the following protocol, if they're monolingual or bilingual or English?
Not yet, but we, you know, I don't have 100 people on each side to really say for sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Questions from the back? Uh-huh.
Donna, and then the lady is a white set.
Right.
And so I couldn't tell whether or not your results may be amplified by attrition bias, that is, like people who want to do the evaluation because they felt they were successful.
Yeah, the one thing that I'm pretty sure, the end is the first column here, right? So like the lowest one was the depression scale because the clinicians felt that they didn't want to run people. It's not only because people dropped out. The clinicians had the option. And if they didn't think there was a need to give someone a depression scale, they just didn't do it. If they didn't feel there was a need to do hemoglobin A1C, they didn't do it. Because this program also has been running through a reimbursement on health insurance when possible. So if it's not reimbursable, they'll say no. Attrition bias, the one thing that I'm sure we've seen because of that is that right now there's not a statistical significant relationship between class attendance level and many outcomes. And I think it's because the people who dropped out of the classes also dropped out of the evaluation. So what would have created that significance is that. The other really interesting thing about an integrative health program, when you're not targeting a particular chronic disease from a statistical perspective, is you don't necessarily want statistical significance on some of these indicators, because if you only have, let's say, 3 out of 20 people who have high blood pressure and you show a statistically significant drop in blood pressure, you've done something wrong. So we have to be really careful about these standard outcomes of significance. So we talk about it a lot. I just hurried today in terms of clinical significance as well as statistical significance, because they're sometimes not the same. Not
so
separately.
It seems like your model is very combined.
Yes.
So I'm really interested in what was the impact of that third construct called alternative approaches, and how that affected depression. How did that affect stress? How did that affect the health engagement?
Yeah, our philosophy is a little different. We wouldn't divide it up into those three constructs like that, because we think that they're integrated throughout. And to actually separate it for evaluation would sort of be counter to the fundamental belief that it's the integrative model that is what's working. So,
the reason why I ask this is because we are at the health department in Detroit, we're already focused on exercise and fitness, and what I want to do is add that third component. And I'm just interested in, if you add that, what happens to those indicators?
If I was your consultant, for example, I would say I wouldn't think about it that way. I really wouldn't. Because when you separate alternative and complementary from exercise, you've just, it's really sort of a false distinction. Because a lot of, you know, where would you put Tai Chi then? Is it exercise or is it just the alternative thing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like we had a class, we give them a free gym membership, a very traditional Western gym, and some of them love it and some of it hate it. And because they're not comfortable in gyms. And so then we went to bands that they could do at home because they were much more comfortable. Now, what would you call that? Alternative? Or just cost efficient? Or just exercise? Or what would you call dance?
Or expansion of what's currently
done. Right. So I think that the distinctions are wouldn't hold up, you know, because in the South Bronx, like the early groups, they're like, we don't want to use exercise facilities too much, but we love to dance. Mm-hmm. And that was great. That fulfilled the physical activity part of it. So I wouldn't make the distinction. I would just say what we want to do is choose from all of the possibilities what fits the population you're trying to reach the best, and let them help you make that decision because they know.
I think there's a question in the center here.
here.
The initial recruitment, the physicians at the Urban Health Plan made the referral. So if they had a patient that they felt could participate, they made a referral. And now we're up to the point where the waiting list is
175 people.
There's 100. There's only one exclusion criteria, and that's if the physician feels that the participating might put their health at risk. There's no other inclusion criteria at this site. It's entirely up to the physician. Oh, it's canyonranchinstitute.org, and then you'll see everything else from there.
And now you're up to how many people?
The waiting list is...
Waiting list, last we heard from our partner in South Bronx, was 175 people waiting to get in. It's a lot of referrals between, you know, families and friends and that kind of thing. No longer so much for physician, although the physician has to clear you to participate.
And is it just specifically adults?
Yes, we've gone down to
age 18
and above.
Yeah.
Just the whole IRB problem when we're just getting it launched.
Yeah, it's and a lot do easier. You consider including teenagers on some level?
Maybe for movement, or recreational, they do the whole thing. Yeah, through the whole thing. If they did any of it, they'd do the whole thing.
This is such a great project. Thank you. Thank you for letting us know about it.
Sure.